Our country's motto is E Pluribus Unum. Out of many, we are one. Will we stay true to that motto? Well, we heard Donald Trump's answer last week at his convention. He's taken the Republican Party a long way, from morning in America to midnight in America. It comes down to what Donald Trump doesn't get. America is great because America is good.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday. It is July 29th, 2015, 5:09. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. We made it through a busy, busy week as we head to the weekend. Finally, the conventions are over there. You heard last night's speech, Hillary Clinton's speech, the final big speech of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. We'll continue to have a wrap-up of that throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show. As we move forward here this morning, we'll talk a little bit about politics, how they're intertwined with the markets maybe. And as we move forward, we'll also talk about Apple a little later in the program. What is their future? The new iPhone maybe this fall, we'll see. What is Apple thinking? We'll have a little bit of a conversation on that later in the broadcast. But we begin on the WGN Market Desk. Asian markets are mixed today after the Bank of Japan announced a modest expansion of its lavish monetary stimulus to perk up sluggish growth, sending the Japanese stock index up. Bank of Japan ended a policy meeting today by announcing it will expand purchases of assets from financial institutions to help inject more cash into the world's third largest economy and pursue its 2% inflation target. But those measures fell short of expectations, and we're seeing that on the markets right now. The Dow futures are off about 15 points, the S&P up just a measly 3, and the NASDAQ futures are up just about 15. In Asia, the Nikkei ended up, but just by about 92 points, just a half a percent. Generally, markets mixed in Asia overnight. In Europe, the generally higher, with the FTSE 100, the only index that's lower there this morning. And so that brings us to our morning discussion. Paul Nolte in-house this morning from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, you were watching the goings-on in Japan this morning. You also thought they fell a little bit short of expectations.
They did. The markets were expecting a lot more out of the bank. They're looking for additional quantitative easing and more money coming into the system, and that's been really the drug of choice for markets around the world. So the futures markets were a little bit higher overnight prior to that announcement, and it backed off a little bit. So the reaction has been fairly muted, a little bit more excitement in the foreign exchange markets, though. But again, a little bit shy of expectations.
My job on the show is to bring in all sorts of people and have them in the conversation. There may be some folks out there listening that don't know what quantitative easing is. Give us a little bit of a lesson there.
Quantitative easing is a new tool for the Fed. For those over the age of, say, maybe 25, this never existed before. So this came into being after 2008. And in essence, what it's done is the Fed has gone out in the marketplace and bought bonds in the open market. And so the cash has to go somewhere. So when I'm buying the bonds, I buy the bonds from you. You are now sitting on cash. So that allows you then with cash to hopefully go spend it. And in essence, that's what the quantitative easing is buying up a lot of that debt, putting that cash into the hands of former bondholders.
And I know this is an area where you're big, is you're a big bonds guy. So this is impacting your work this week?
A little bit. Really what was interesting to me was more the comments from the Fed when they announced we're holding rates steady, and there's some expectation now that they will raise rates in September. But the reaction to the market was interesting. I would have expected the bonds to sell off a little bit, yields to go back up as people rotate toward the stock market. We saw stocks rise, but we also saw bonds rise and yields go down a little bit. So there's, again, still that flight to safety, and the U.S. is still the safest market for fixed income, at least, and certainly one of the highest yielding around the world.
When you see a headline then like this one from MarketWatch.com that says, point of no return for quantitative easing getting closer, that seems like a dire headline. What does that mean?
You know, what they're finding is, and certainly now we've had some experience with it, you know, again, starting with 2008, there's now a lot of question as to whether it's very efficacy. How effective has it been in generating economic growth, generating inflation? And what we're finding is not so much. I mean, the stereotypical comment that I would make to people is, if I were to give you $5,000 today, what would you do with it? And the response from a lot of people is, I would save it, I would pay down debt, whatever that might be. But that doesn't do anything for the economy. 15 years ago, if I said that, you'd say, well, you know, I'm going to buy a big screen TV, I'm going to buy a motorcycle, you know, do an addition onto a house, whatever. That provided economic activity. People are sitting on their cash a lot more. And again, we're in a different place right now from a debt perspective. So as a result of that, a lot of that cash is not going into the economy.
And that goes back to the discussion we've had about why that is. People are still scared of another 2008, aren't they?
It's not so much that they're scared of a 2008. It's they're still in the process of repairing their balance sheet. And one of the big debates is the wealth effect, what they're calling the wealth effect. So the thought is, if I can juice the markets and the stock market goes from 10,000 to 30,000, I'm that much wealthier. And since I feel a lot wealthier, I'm going to go out and spend money. What they find is exactly the example I made is, yeah, I have a little bit more in my pocket, but I'm not so sure that that this is permanent. It's a permanent increase in my wealth. So as a result of that, I'm going to bank it. I'm going to sit on it and not spend it.
Hey, it's your money. For 54 million Americans, cash is king. It was a close second in a Bankrate survey on long-term investments, right behind real estate. But chief financial analyst Greg McBride disagrees.
Cash is not an appropriate long-term investment. Inflation is going to erode the buying power of that money, which over time, that's just as damaging as any loss of principal would be.
McBride says the stock market may be volatile, but it's rewarded long-term investors that show patience and discipline. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 520. It's interesting sitting, listening to these pieces with Paul Nolte in studio, giving us the play-by-play as we go. Paul said during that spot just then, maybe. So cash maybe is not a good...
The comment was that, you know, cash is a lousy investment. You're going to lose out to inflation. And my point is maybe. And that maybe is if the markets decline 10, 15, 20% or so, cash is not necessarily a bad thing. We're seeing negative interest rates around the world. So holding on to cash, you know, storing it underneath your mattress in a negative interest rate world is not a bad thing to do either. And there's no guarantees with the stock market. So that's part of the reason why I say cash is not necessarily a bad thing.
Do you suggest a shoebox or some other sort of metallic box device? Or
something with a lock on it, preferably that your neighbors don't know where it's at.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about quantitative easing, because you mentioned something as we went into the break about helicopter money. That explains why there's a picture of helicopters going around in circles here next to quantitative easing. What do we mean by helicopter money?
Well, the thought behind it was that the picture being depicted is they're going to be flying around the country just dropping large bills out of the helicopter to the general population. Now that I have all this money in my pocket, I'm going to go out and spend it. Logistically, what that really means is not that the Fed is going to be able to do that. That's not part of their mandate. They can't really do that. But that will require the federal government, actually, to approve something like that. And we saw something like that, if you will. Think of a tax rebate. And that's really what that money is. It's money that you didn't anticipate, weren't going to have. And by a government edict, you now have in your pocket.
So, and as that moves, as we get moved closer to Election Day, the chances of something like that happening in the U.S. are pretty slim, right?
I do think they're fairly slim. I mean, you know, it's, and I think part of the concern for a lot of people when they look at that, it is the sound of desperation coming from central banks, and that's the worry for a lot of people on Wall Street is, you know, what's next, and are we just grasping at straws? And again, that's part of the reason why people still run to bonds. because there is some certainty with that in what is becoming a little bit more chaotic world.
People are still saying that about the Federal Reserve, even after this week, about them having that wishy-washy sort of a position that they don't know exactly what they want to do. And I was reading a piece yesterday about other expansions throughout history. They usually average about 16 or 17 rate increases. This expansion, we've seen one. What should we take away from that, first of all, and should we be worried about that?
Well, I don't know if we should be worried about it. And this expansion has been weaker than most in history. So if you, again, take a look at all the expansions that we've had coming out of recessionary periods, depressionary periods, the growth that we've seen coming out has generally been a lot stronger than this one. This one has been characterized by large quantities of debt. And every recession that we've ever had has always been led by an inventory type of recession. We have too much of something that creates a recession. And it's something that we had too much of is debt. We haven't worked our way out of that yet. So the inventory that we have is the IOU. And so I think the policy answer is different this time. And again, the fear is, again, that deflationary thought of whatever I'm looking to buy today might be priced lower tomorrow. So why would I buy it today? I'll just wait a while and it'll come down in price. That's part of the reason why they're trying to spur inflation, because it would spur you to purchase something if you think it's going to be more expensive tomorrow.
And so you're in the camp then, falling into the camp that we might see a rate increase in September. Why do you feel that way?
I do. And I think part of the reason, you know, it's a change for me, because I've been of the opinion that the Fed really won't raise rates this year. If they're truly economically data dependent, they won't. But I think the Fed is taking their cue a little bit more from the financial markets, and the financial markets are well behaved right now. We didn't raise rates in front of Brexit. There was that concern. We didn't raise rates early in the year because of energy prices falling apart and the equity markets were dropping. We raised rates in December. The markets were quiet. We didn't raise rates in August, September of last year because of the revaluation of the yuan. And again, the equity markets were in a funk. So I think if the markets behave themselves and stay kind of where they're at, maybe a little bit higher from here, the Fed will feel comfortable that they can handle a rate increase.
And then the 7 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks before Election Day, do you still feel that way?
If we take a look at the history, the Fed has raised rates in advance of the election. It's not been taboo to do that. So it's certainly within the realm.
And they have been trying to make the point that they're apolitical, which would maybe even push them to do it even more that day.
That's, again, I think the economics and the financial markets are going to dictate more to that than I think the election will.
Well, as we move into the weekend, do you have anything good for us in terms of places to put our money?
Well, you know, we've talked about technology sector of late, and certainly the numbers out of Amazon, Google, Apple this week point up the fact that the new big tech companies are doing very well, thank you. So technology still looks good. Again, international markets look good to us as well, and still a healthy dose of fixed income to allow you to sleep at night.
Is there a tech company that you like better than another?
We own Apple and Google in the portfolios. Amazon, I still can't figure out. Google and Apple are still very good companies, and we think still very good long-term buys.
Both had pretty good weeks this week.
Absolutely.
All right. Paul Nolte, have a good weekend, and stay away from the television. Try to get some non-financial news up into your portfolio this week. And enjoy. Your daughter's here with us. We didn't mention that either.
No, she got up a little early this morning to see radio.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you got an eyeful and you'll go back to bed and never come back here.
Thank
you. I like that. Paul, have a good weekend. Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management. Remember, you can get his Nolte notes as well when you sign up online.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program as we take a look at Apple today in a conversation that we're going to bring our assistant producer, Bennett Wagnite, into, because Bennett, as we were working on shows this week, showed me that Reddit, which is the site where you can go and get a lot of questions answered, it was the WAS, Wozniak, the former Apple creator, co-creator of Apple, was on there answering questions. Bennett, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks so much.
So good to have you on this side of the microphone. So Apple's had a sort of a mixed week, right? I mean, they had their earnings here in the United States were good, but right. They have trouble overseas, especially in China.
Yeah. And so lately with the just looking at things from the China perspective, year over year, it's been a 33% drop in China, which is their second biggest market, according to some recent research. But just to kind of give you context, you know, we're thinking of this from this daily's perspective of this third quarter earnings. But we're also kind of looking at this Steve Wozniak conversation that was it was about 4 months ago, so back in March. So it was really just kind of interesting to say, all right, let's look back at this, see from a perspective who's kind of a bird's eye view, and, you know, gather a few of these questions that some users from this site had. And they were very good, insightful questions that we thought maybe we could apply this to, you know, where Apple stands today.
Right, because Woz is one of these guys, even though he's not, you know, involved in the inner workings of Apple, every time a new Apple device comes out, he literally has a lawn chair camping out in front of the San Francisco Apple store to buy the first device that comes out, whether it's the new iPhone, the new iPod, whatever it is, he's always there first. So he's sort of a good barometer of where Apple is.
And I think for the rest of his life, he gets that privilege to be first in any Apple line that he chooses.
Even if there are other people in
line.
Even
if there are other, yeah. I think right. People will push aside. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the questions that he was asked about Apple. And I thought one of the biggest ones that sort of kind of made the conversation for me was, is the new CEO of Apple, is he like Steve Jobs in any ways? Is he doing what Steve Jobs would have did? Basically, that was sort of the question, right?
Yeah, so one of the users, Matt Baster, he said, what's Tim Cook doing wrong and right? And, like, what do you see from a perspective of the outsider looking in? And he said, you know what? He's doing everything right as much as he can. I mean, to be frank, he's running the biggest technology company in the world that has one of the biggest influences throughout the entire span of history, arguably. So he's doing a lot of right things where he's designing technology that is affecting the lives of people, not simply to create technology, to create technology, to fix something about our day-to-day experiences. So he mentioned the Apple Watch. Steve Wozniak says, every day, you know, when I wake up, I'll just reach over and instead of getting my phone from my bedside table, unlocking it and kind of getting all this bright stuff, I just look over on my wrist. It's right there. I can say, send a text to my wife, and it's right there. And it changes the way we interact with technology on a day-to-day basis, which is the main focus that he says Tim Cook is really doing a good job with.
So what else were people asking the Woz?
Another one of the major questions that stuck out to me was, we actually touched on this a little bit earlier in the week, was do you think Apple would be wise to enter the car market? And so Engular was one of the users that asked this. And I thought Steve Wozniak had a really interesting response. He said, you know, this is one of the biggest potential moves for Apple in the coming times. And it's something that they're taking the opposite approach of Tesla. You know, Tesla's saying, we're just going to roll out these beta tests, try it on real-world situations, and, you know, we're going to see how this goes. And Apple, it seems like, is doing a much more conservative approach to this. They did hire Dan Dodge, who was a former BlackBerry executive, who is developing software for these self-driving cars and much more automated automotives. And so they're really taking a slow approach compared to a Tesla or a lot of these other electric car makers. And they're saying, you know what, they're going to be much more meticulous about what they're going to be planning out when they're releasing things. But he says, I think it's going to be one of those markets where if they're going to do it, they're going to do it right. They're not going to let it go out, fix it, and say, oh, this was a big speed bump, but we're going to go back, do a little bit more testing, and then re-release. They're going to have a really good product that they're going to set out and then have people integrate into their lives.
So we heard in the last segment with Paul Nolte that Apple is actually one of the tech stocks that his portfolio suggests. They have it in all of their portfolios. I'm interested in the millennial sort of attitude here. Do you still enjoy Apple products? Are you still excited about Apple? And are others in your demographic also still excited about Apple, or do you want something new?
Yeah, you know, as from a personal standpoint, I do really enjoy Apple products still. At this point in my life, Apple was the first smartphone. The Apple iPhone was the first smartphone that I ever had. I had a dumb phone before that. So I've really, at this point, it's second nature. You know, it's something that I expect to have as something that I need for my day-to-day process. So I've just come to learn that, you know, there really is no other, it seems like, an alternative for technology when it comes to like a smartphone or like a tablet or computer for that sake. So I've really enjoyed, you know, the process of having that technology at a standard. At this point also, you know, I've also kind of taken the perspective of, you know, I might not need a whole facelift of a phone. I don't need a ton of physical changes. I don't need, you know, massive software updates, but little things that might get tinkered here and there that say, you know, instead of having to manually sync up an email or a Siri request to the calendar, it does it automatically. So it's the little things that you don't think of that eventually you look back and you say, oh, wow, that actually did a lot for me down the road on my day-to-day life.
And so if we can overlay then what Apple's currently doing now, they're getting ready to roll out the new iPhone. You've just described what they're doing. And that is the new iPhone's not going to have a lot of big changes, but it's going to take care of these little things that just drive us crazy with our phones, with mail, with syncing, all of those things that you've mentioned. It's almost like you were part of their demographic test.
Right, right. And, you know, that's kind of what I thought of when thinking about this conversation. I said, you know what, as consumers, I feel like we have to have this voice and say, we've been part of this test for years and years and years now. So let's just kind of step back and look at this all. That I was doing a little bit more research as well. And everyone's saying, you know, there aren't going to be a ton of big physical changes. A lot of rumors and a lot of talk is saying that there might not be an audio jack that will be on the phone. It might be a little bit more Bluetooth or something, but something that might seem major in the immediate, for the technology. But, you know, eventually we'll say, oh, I think Apple really did their research, and this might be best for me as a consumer in technology.
Because there are people that say that Apple needs to keep coming up with these next best big thing.
Right.
I just think that's not, you can't keep doing that. There has to be an end to that.
Right. I think that's a good sign, though, because it's a lot of these other companies that are really trying to make dramatic changes on their phone from one version to another that's really really kind of shifted our perspective of saying, well, if you compare that side to side to an iPhone, well, the iPhone 3 compared to the iPhone 7 isn't going to look too different. But if you compare maybe another brand, the version 1 to a version 5, then it might look very different comparatively.
Yeah. So, okay. I think we have a name for this segment too, by the way. Good talk.
All right. Good talk.
Good talk. I
like
that. Yeah. So that's Bennett Wakenight. He's our assistant producer here on The Opening Bell. He's the guy that helps come up with some of the great ideas that we have on the show. We're talking about Apple, of course. It's in Paul Nolte's portfolio. Maybe it should be in yours as well. We'll keep following this as we follow your money here on The Opening Bell. Good talk, Bennett. Good talk.
Good talk.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:51. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Market Desk. Dow futures are lower by about 22 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are higher by just about a percent, just about a point now. Less than a half a point. They've been good. They were higher a little bit earlier. S&P futures now lower, off about 225. Let's get the latest on commodities this morning. Orion Samuelson standing by. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. And as we're looking at the grain market overnight, it's continuing to move lower in wheat, corn, and soybeans. I'll tell you what, Steve, this crop situation that we're looking at so far this summer has been about as ideal as it can be. And it is historically high on the good to excellent category. And the other thing that keeps putting pressure on prices for wheat, corn, and soybeans is the fact that by this time of the year, the good to excellent category in the crop conditions report every week generally tends to move lower. Hasn't done that this year, and now we're at the end of July, and as I said, historically, we have never seen crop conditions as good as they are now. That means downward pressure.
And that usually means, it usually happens because we start to see the drying out, the dry conditions move in, the lack of rain, storm damage, that sort of thing?
That's right, and there are always dry pockets, but it takes a pretty big dry pocket in the corn for production, for example, because when you plant 92 million acres of corn, you have to have some dry conditions over a pretty widespread area to make a big difference in the ultimate corn yield. The other thing that is interesting, Brazil, of course, is a huge producer of soybeans, and since their growing season is opposite ours, they tend to take over the marketing of beans worldwide when we pretty much finish our export season. And over the last 10 years, the soybean acreage in Brazil has grown by 61%, much of that because of China, the world's largest buyer of soybeans. But because of soybean prices and other events this year, as they get ready to plant the next crop in Brazil, it could be the smallest expansion in 10 years. The Brazil soybean area in the coming season will probably grow by just 2%. That makes it the smallest annual expansion in the past decade. And corn and tight credit limit expectations actually prompting that to happen. So when prices go down, and it gets a little tougher to pay for the seed and pay for the all of the other fertilizers and weed controls and everything else going into the market. So,
so as we're at this historic point, Orion, what is it that farmers are looking over their shoulders to hope doesn't happen? Or what would be the thing to knock this out of the historic level?
Well, if we went without any rain in August, that would really slam the soybean harvest because August is the big month for soybeans. Corn, the big month for the corn is July because that's pollination season. That's when you want good weather. You don't want it terribly hot. And, of course, with the technology that we have put into the corn and soybean plants over the past 10 years or so, it's not like it used to be. We're now able to handle it because a lot of these plant breeders are putting what they call the ability to grow despite drought. And so that has helped. But if we were to get no rain in August, then you would see a totally different soybean price situation, because it could have an impact. We fill out the pods, and the bigger pod size or the bigger pod count on each plant becomes important, and of course timely rains do that. Now, the kind of rains we're getting during the summer, typical, where you'll have a downpour and maybe 2 miles away, not much of anything. That was the case yesterday at my rain gauge at the house in Huntley, Illinois. 4 hundredths of an inch is all I got in my rain gauge. When about 3 miles away, I think they got an inch or more in some of those downpour areas. So typical summertime thunderstorm activity, very localized.
So I bet it's a Friday night. There's a good county fair to go to somewhere.
You better believe it. A lot of county fairs on the schedule, but the closest one into the Chicago area is the one at Grays Lake, Illinois. And that fair continues through Sunday. Somebody wondering about state fairs, next week, August 3rd, we'll get the opening of the Wisconsin State Fair at West Allis, the opening of the Indiana State Fair in Indianapolis. But yeah, it's a great time of the year. And the first big outdoor farm show of the season really gets underway next week, a 3-day show at Redwood Falls, Minnesota, Farm Fest, and weather permitting for flying conditions, we'll be going up to spend a day at that show.
All right, Orion, thank you very much. Orion Samuelson, we'll continue to follow Your Money throughout the morning. Orion will be along, too, with commodities and other ag news as we move through the Steve Cochran Show and on into our Friday here on 720 WGN. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. We want to just briefly say and pass along our condolences to the Greg Helfer family. We had Greg on The Opening Bell back in June to talk about the business of jewelry, one of the historic companies on Chicago's Jewelers Row. Greg died this week, and our condolences go out to his family. We've put the interview that we did with him on our Facebook page. Our condolences, all of us here at WGN are just sad about this, and we couldn't pass along any more of our condolences to the family.